So welcome to this episode of the Telltales podcast. Today we're joined by Tom Lowe, who is a senior lecturer in higher education at the University of Portsmouth. Tom will be discussing attendance at in-person timetabled sessions in a post-pandemic higher education setting.
Thanks so much, Chris, for having me on the podcast. And today I will be talking, as you highlighted, about a challenge and a set of questions that continually get asked to me as somebody who researches student engagement in higher education. And that is the current trends that universities all over the world are seeing, which is student attendance decreasing or dipping in at university level education, particularly post-COVID-19 pandemic. So as Chris highlights, I'm a senior lecturer in higher education at the University of Portsmouth, where I work in the academic development team to support lecturers with their curriculum planning and all elements of engagements with students. And this is something I've increasingly been asked about across the last couple of years, both from colleagues at Portsmouth, but also from colleagues across the sector. Many of you will know, you'll have seen different tweets and LinkedIn posts and conversations online and on different social media platforms that colleagues are starting to see more and more empty classrooms, lower student attendance. And there's perhaps lots of theories going around of why that this may be the case. And in this, I guess I can ramble on and talk along in this podcast about what are the different trends and themes going on in this space. So I think whenever I speak to a colleague on this topic, I always start by saying, actually, this isn't just you. This isn't just you as a lecturer. This isn't just you or your course or your area of the university. And this isn't just Portsmouth. We're seeing these challenges and trends all over the UK higher education sector. And then from what I'm seeing online, we're seeing challenges in this space in different nations around the world. It's a really tough gig, higher education post-COVID-19. A lot happened during the COVID-19 pandemic. COVID-19 was like a great catalyst for many of the behavioural trends or engagement trends in wider society, such as we used online delivery systems more during the pandemic. That was something that was going on anyway, with people moving away from physically attending the high street to ordering more things online. That is a trend that has continued during since the pandemic, but also it perhaps catalyzed and moved forwards during the pandemic. Similar with ordering food, similar with keeping in contact with friends digitally rather than making time to see them in person. And many people say that COVID-19 was actually a great magnifier of the pandemic, of society, of different trends that were going on. It leads us as universities, and the majority of universities are we talking about in this context are in-person universities, where individuals have to leave one geographical location to attend another geographical location, like a classroom, to participate in their higher education experience. So it leaves us in quite a tough place if we have these wider societal trends going on of how people engage with other people or other activities. If they are changing, then of course there's going to be changes in regards to the curriculum. In this podcast, I'm going to talk more about these challenges, but I wanted to start off by saying that this is something that everybody is facing, and I'm going to hopefully bring some considerations to the context. For those of you listening in the UK, we're also in a very outcomes-focused system, and this is similar in other nations around the world, but where at the moment we're in a sector where there's a high emphasis on what do students get for their time at university. Do they get a graduate job afterwards? Do they enjoy themselves or see it as value for money in a tuition fee sector? And also, do they feel engaged while they're there? Do they feel like they're learning something? Often when we come to talk about improving student learning, improving student experience, improving students' graduate outcomes or grade outcomes, we start having conversations about student engagement. And anyone who's been a teacher or a lecturer or has supported students for a professional service role will know it often comes back to conversations about student engagement, where we say, oh, the really engaged ones, they're the students that are more likely to succeed. And that's certainly true. It's something we've seen, but it's also different across different contexts, different settings, and perhaps different engagement activities. So a student who could be highly engaged in your class at 9 to 11 in the morning might be not very engaged in the class later on in the day. A student who's highly engaged in their course may be highly engaged in their degree, but they might not be engaged at all in the sports and recreation part of the university. A student who's highly engaged in one professional service, maybe the careers service, might not be engaged at all in the academic services. So we know that student engagement is individual and it happens in an eclectic array of activities across the university. But student engagement can really be classified in three different ways or three different areas, or was anyway. I'm going to contradict that point in a moment. Vicky Trowler did a lit review of student engagement in 2010, and that still stands up today. The three key themes that were identified in that literature review of student engagement and higher education, of different areas of student engagement we can focus on in the university. The first is emotional engagement, so how students feel. They feel happy or sad, satisfied, not satisfied, like they have a sense of belonging, or they feel like they are alienated, the opposite to belonging. We can talk about cognitive student engagement. This is learning engagement, all those words we see on module descriptors, learning outcomes. Of course, this is how students learn. And then behavioral engagement. This is stuff that students do or activities students do. These are often the activities that we can measure, behavioral. So you can measure if someone's attended or not through a register. Or you can also now, in a data analytics world we are in, we can measure loads of things in loads of exciting ways, such as whether someone's viewed a video online or if someone's attended campus with their door card swipe. And we can start to mix all those data together. So behaviour engagement is very prominent post-pandemic. Why is it? Well, we've got the tech now to mix data sets together. If you're in a fee-paying higher education system like England, the system I'm speaking in, there's a worry of thinking, well, we need to know how students are engaging, because if they're engaging less, they might drop out and we lose that income. But also post-pandemic, when a lot of our students, particularly during the lockdowns, were stuck in their bedrooms, stuck in their households, we didn't necessarily see our students in person. And again, those of you who have been a teacher or an academic pre-pandemic will know that sometimes you would get to know your students and then you perhaps became concerned about a student because they acted different in class or because they were interacting differently or because they stopped attending. And therefore, you may put a support network in. So those three areas of student engagement kind of come into this picture of attendance and inform a lot of my thinking. And I think my first point I want to make there, before I pause to go back to Chris, is that a lot of the engagement measures that we are looking at is behavioural. And when we're looking at student attendance, that isn't the full engagement picture, but it isn't a behavioural picture where we are suggesting that potentially students are less engaged because they're not attending timetabled classes on campus. I'm going to come on to that more in a moment. The final area of student engagement, I said there's more than three, is the area of student engagement relating to educational development. So how we engage students in developing the university. This is also referred to as student voice activities, surveys, module evaluations, and students as partners initiatives.
That's really interesting to hear, and particularly that research stands up today. So with the prevalence of online teaching, do you think that students' expectations have now shifted in a post-pandemic higher education setting?
I think everything's changed. I spoke to a colleague right at the start of the pandemic. I think it was in March 2020, an academic at Stanford University. And they said to me, if you're going to put everything online and you want to return to the higher education we had before, you need to take it away straight away, which is quite provocative, I know. But what happened in a lot of institutions is we exposed a heck of a lot of learners around the world to online learning. Prior to the pandemic, a small minority of individuals in society will have been exposed to full-time education online. During the pandemic, millions of individuals around the world were exposed to online learning. And they'll know if they like it, but they also know if they don't like it too. They'll also know what it's like. It wasn't just being exposed to it for a week or for one staff development session. They were exposed to it for months on end or years on end. And I definitely think it's changed engagement behaviours, just like it's changed our own behaviours. So we often talk about students like they're a different homogenous mass of individual in our society. Students are people, like we're people, and our engagement behaviours have changed as well since the pandemic. So I talked already at the start that our shopping behaviours have perhaps increasingly moved online. Our social behaviours are perhaps increasingly moved online. And there's massive benefits to that in terms of time saved, accessibility to catch up with our friends who are on the other side of the world. But it has changed in regard to learning as well. And again, I absolutely take the time to celebrate how much progress has been made in making education more accessible. Students are able to engage with more content online. They're able to repeat their viewing of, for example, an activity that perhaps took place live. They can see it again later if it's recorded. But engagement behaviours have changed, absolutely. If we think about ourselves as employees, our behaviours have changed. If our employer asks us to go into the workplace and says, well, you've all got to be in on Thursday, and we didn't think it was worth our time, then we're probably going to be a bit more resistant to go in for that same activity the week later. So, for example, so I'm going to come on to this later on, but if we are asking our students to come in-person event, whether that's a class, a training, an activity, an advice session, and they did not perceive the relevance of their physical attendance compared to engaging with the exact same verbal or visual content online, you will start to lose people. So conversations around perceived relevance of why are you asking me to get a bus, to travel an hour, to spend my money in a cost of living crisis, to come into campus for something that could have been replicated online. Now, so I want people to think, well, we're going through this as staff members and with our teams and our colleagues all the time. And we're experiencing those challenges where people say, well, why can't I just tune in online? We will be having the same thing with our students. So absolutely things have changed. There's other things to consider. We talk about generational differences a lot, and we can stereotype about generations, and that's not something we should always do, but we are dealing with the majority of our students who are of traditional age coming into higher education, or of the Generation Z, which is a generation that's been, which are highly digitally able, are used to engaging with things online. And I wrote a blog during the pandemic highlighting that this is also the, you know, not just the digital Google generation, this is also the Netflix generation. And we know from universities that students, where they have their classes able to tune in online, that students aren't turning up to classes and then waiting a whole semester or teaching term and then watching an entire unit of study or module of study in one weekend. And I called this blog box setting their degree. And we know that's happening. We know even further that people, and I'm not saying just students, because I know staff are doing it too, are not just watching things online instead of tuning in, I mean, coming in person, but they're also fast forwarding it as well. They're watching it at double speed or 1.5 speed. And students have told me this. They've said, why would I watch a lecture in an hour when I can watch it in 40 minutes? So engagement behaviors in people has changed. I think you add other things to the context that make this even more extreme. So we've talked about the COVID-19 pandemic, in regards to the digitization that was exaggerated during that time. We spoke with a student recently and they said, well, we've been told to keep distant from others for many years. So you're expecting us to want to come back into these closed spaces all of a sudden? For those students who are busy, so if students have part-time work, caring responsibilities, lots going on in their lives, just like we do as academics or professional service staff members, we are far more strategic with our time. And again, the pandemic taught us that as staff, but it also taught students that as well, that okay, I can go from so I used to run a careers service during the pandemic, and my employer facing staff members pre-pandemic, they would have to drive an hour, have a 1 hour meeting with the employer and drive back to campus, have a meeting with me, then they probably wouldn't go and speak to another employer that afternoon because they'd have to drive somewhere again. Well, actually in the pandemic and since the pandemic, my staff who were in those roles, they would have they'd meet one employer at 9, meet with me at 10 o'clock, meet another employer at 11, then another colleague at 12, and they wouldn't even put their shoes on because it was all online. So we can do a lot more. The productivity has increased. And our students will too be saying those things as well. They'll be thinking more strategically with their time, thinking, well, if I don't go in for that class, I can do this instead because I can catch up later. It's very interesting how different universities have made different decisions based on this. I know some universities are still recording every class live, where a student in the morning could wake up and decide, maybe based on the weather, maybe based on how much money they've got in their pocket, maybe based on their current stresses that day, whether they're going to come into campus or not. And they may say, you know, if it's snowing outside, if they're quite low on money and they'd rather save that money to buy food instead, and they don't want to pay for the bus, or if they've got a deadline that they want to put their time into later, students are beginning to not attend for those reasons. Often we place awful brands on students, saying they're lazy people, they don't care. And I can see where those feelings come from. As academics, we're very proud of our work. We care about the classes we've written. We've put in a lot of effort, and that's wonderful. But I wouldn't apply blame to students for not attending. I think there's a more individual mixed picture there on a day by day. But this is part of the context that we are bound in. So there's not one issue. You know, I've talked about the impacts of COVID-19. I haven't talked about the ever-increasing mental health crisis in young people in particular, but society as a whole. I've talked about technology. I guess my final point to make is around the world, different nations are going through the cost of living crisis in different ways. And in the UK, where we're talking, it is particularly pertinent. Notable inflation, significant rises in costs in food, and rent in particular. Many students in the UK do geographically move to go to university and therefore are paying higher rent. So the economy element is a huge deal. If students, you know, students do have a societal label of being low on funds. But if students will be even lower on funds now, what's interesting is in summer 2022, a lot of student unions were talking about, we're going to start food banks on campus. We need to be giving students food on campus. And they absolutely have had impact and done great work. But what we have seen, particularly with UK home students who haven't got any visa restriction of how many hours they can work a week, is that students are working a huge amount of hours per week. They're not doing 10 hours a week. They might be doing 30 or more. That's because the part-time work is there. In the UK, there's a lot of service sector roles available, but also because they need to fund their work. And the cost of living crisis report conducted by the Russell Group Students' Union spoke about that, saying such things as 1 in 4 students regularly go without food, 54% of students saying that it's impacting their academic performance due to financial pressures, and even 18% are looking at dropping out.
Well, that's really insightful, Tom, and thank you for covering a really wide and diverse range of points within that. So my question is, are there effective strategies that both universities and academics can actually employ to improve attendance in those timetabled sessions? And like you say, get that student from their beds into the classroom or into the lab or wherever that may be.
Thank you, Chris. I mean, you brought me onto the right point straight away there, which is, how do we look ahead to the new normal? So there's a lot of conversation about the new normal, and it absolutely is the new normal, but it will continue to evolve, that new normal. And for those thinking, oh, when it goes back to normal of before, unfortunately, that's not going to happen. This session won't talk about ChatGPT, but that's another example of other things going on out beyond this. It's increasingly going to ask us to think strategically about whether students, first of all, I would put a perceived relevance test on anything we do. So will students see this as relevant for them to come along? We're going to have to focus on our courses first and the campus more widely, but the core of the academic experience, the part of that all students have to engage with to be a student, because if you stop engaging with your course, you won't last too long, you'll end up failing and dropping out. We have to focus on that first. So absolutely, there are some strategies and there are some things to consider, and each of those will be different for different courses. A colleague I saw speak at UCL spoke about the 3 R's of engaging students. And these are quite interesting. These are quite old. These are from secondary education spaces. But focusing on, so the 3 R's, what are they? They're relationships, rigor, and relevance. So in a higher education setting, relationships are really important in regards to having positive relationships and communities of learning, which Professor Peter Felton writes out about a lot in Elon University, making sure that there's a good community environment in those learning spaces. So, and that does come down to your teaching techniques. So if you are a lecturer who speaks at your students for 1 hour, some of those students in that room won't know anyone in that room. So they're not going to gain any good relationships with their peers if they're just spoken at. So introducing activities, interactivities between students, getting them to pair and share. Pair and share is the main teaching engagement activity I use, is getting students to talk to their neighbour. It's really important. So that, think about your teaching techniques. And if a lonely student commuted an hour in, do they get to talk to anyone in your class? Okay. And you can't rely on students talking to each other during the break times. And people are talking less in the world. It's a big worry because of digitization. But we want to get students talking in our classrooms. Now, you can build other things on top of that. You know, you might say, well, I haven't got a budget for a pizza party or a big international trip or anything like that. Of course, those things will further enhance. Going on excursions with your students, running interactive activities with your students, running a pizza party. Yes, they will increase belonging. And I'll come on to that in a moment. But get your students talking to one another and mix them up as well early on from day one, and keep that as a theme of your curriculum design. Now, other colleagues will endorse things like use Padlet. That does engage students, but that does engage students as an individual. You're still not getting people to talk to each other and create positive relationships. Similar to you as an academic, don't stand behind the lectern over all the time. If you can turn up 15 minutes early, leave 15 minutes late, just hover around and talk to people. It's going to increase that student, staff and university positive relationship. Rigor is the second R. For me, in higher education, that's about course design. It's about really clear course design and well-managed expectations. In that course design, you can look at perceived relevance, which is the third R, by the way. Ensuring that actually there's not just one class you need to attend in a module or a unit of study that links to their assessment. You will see students only attending that class. You've got to ensure that actually there's a perceived relevance of attending the entire course, that there's a benefit to attending the entire course, and that students understand that the whole course complements to their graduateness and their learning and their assessments, not just one class, for example. Managing expectations is really important, not just in your module or your unit, which you have control over, or your professional service, but moving towards consistency. So all business management lecturers are aware of what expectation they are managing. What's your key messages in regards to things like attendance, participation? How are you managing expectations for assessment, module handbooks, designing your courses? And then as a university as a whole, trying to move towards more consistency will create those communities that are more likely to engage in a similar way and hopefully a positive way. And then relevance, I've spoken about before, which is really focusing every single time. If you are asking someone will travel an hour to come to your class, what is the relevance to them attending? And some people are provocative enough to say, well, if people aren't attending, you need to look at your own teaching practice. Because if students don't see your class worth turning up to, you are part of that picture. I'm not saying it's all you. I've talked about everything else going on in society and you have a tough gig, but you are part of that picture too. Something to be aware of. Community building is really important. And looking to increase community building, really reflecting on the balance between face-to-face and online. You can put everything online. You can put lots of activities online. At Portsmouth, we have a content capture policy, which does have flexibility. So at our institution, we don't put full recordings up. And I think that's really benefited from my time at Portsmouth. I really noticed the attendance is quite good. I've spoken with other universities where everything is recorded live, and of course, people aren't turning up as much. And have conversations with your student reps about all of these things I've spoken about. There are some things to avoid, if I could go into, Chris, that, you know, if we can avoid. One of them is doing a 1 hour session in a day where nothing else is on. That will always go not that great. You know, if students says, why would I come in for 1 hour? We are moving towards a sector where we are probably going to be bunching things more, recognizing that our students are going to have to work a lot alongside their degrees. You know, some big financial package is not coming anytime soon to university students. So we have to recognize that students are going to have to be strategic with their time and balance things like part-time work to support their studies. So just doing a 1 hour, getting students to come to campus for 1 hour, it's something to avoid. Avoid reward/punish models. And we think, okay, let's link it to assessment, attending, okay, can be messy. Punishing students for not attending, I've everything I've read says don't do that. It won't lead to a good student-staff relationship. And also, do we want to force attendance? I don't think that's going to be good for your NSS down the corridor or your student satisfaction for those of you outside the UK. Thinking about your assessment, how it aligns to the whole course, though, is important, to the whole module. And I think be cautious about pre-work activity. So sometimes we can have cultures that were set up by our own university experience where, let's generalize massively, that do the reading in advance. If you haven't done the reading, you're not coming into my class. I think that's quite harsh, actually. People's lives are quite chaotic. If you've got a student who's got a lot going on in their life, doing the reading isn't their top priority, but if they make it to the class, that's success for them. So I wouldn't be too tough on the pre-work. Recognise that there will be students there to engage. When I used to run a master's, I saw the pre-reading as quite light, and I saw it as a springboard reading to warm up for the class. Some others, I know there's different pedagogical practices out there where we're giving a lot of pre-work. Be aware that if you're setting students a heck of a lot of pre-work, they might not come because they haven't been able to fit it in. And again, think back to my earlier considerations of everything that's going on. And consider, have meetings about this. With a lot of this, I don't have one view, but I do endorse having conversations about engagement. And if you put 100% equal experience online, yes, absolutely, that's going to be a huge benefit to people who can't make it, to people who would like to review the material again, and to increase the accessibility of your course for neurodiverse students. Yes, you will gain all those things. But if there's 100% equal experience online, there will be an impact on who turns up in person. Do you focus on things like fear of missing out? I don't know, but it's interesting. Have conversations about it. A lot of colleagues saying belonging is the answer. And I think if you're looking at all these things and having positive student-staff relationships and student-student relationships in regards to being part of a community, making friends, having positive interactions, then of course all of this can lead to a sense of belonging. But it's not just about belonging. It's also about ensuring that students feel like they matter. Because some students will be a university student. Their occupation is being a Portsmouth student. But to other students, being a student is just a small part of their life. They might be doing other things in their life too. They might be a part-time student, they might be a parent, they might be working a lot, you know. So it's recognising that not all students want to get a sense of belonging, but they do want to matter. And so mattering is really important. How can we make students feel like they matter? Well, speaking to them like they're humans. Emailing, having really good email conduct with students. If you can know them by name, that is amazing. Looking to ensure that they aren't feeling alienated during their journey and understanding where they come from. So, you know, understanding your student demographic, who have you got in the room in front of you, is really important.
Thank you, Tom. You are an incredible wealth of knowledge, and it's been absolutely fascinating to listen to you. And I'm sure you could talk for days about this. So just to round off and kind of like the one big takeaway. So if academics or people that work within university are listening to this at the moment and thinking, I really want to increase that student engagement. I want to do one thing. So what is your one big takeaway of the one thing to change that would help most people out?
The one simplest thing to do is to be ready to sacrifice even 15 minutes of your content time in class to begin doing some interactivity and ensure you have some form of interactivity where you're getting students to speak with one another each week, particularly during the start of semester. I think that would be the one thing. And there's lots of things, but that would be the one thing I'd be looking to do. Beyond that, I'd be having conversations about this with your fellow colleagues. And then most importantly, with your student reps, having conversations, trying to understand, look into this. Don't moan and post on social media. We are all part of this picture. And if our students aren't attending our class, we need to look into this and do something about this. So I would absolutely begin the conversation, but also get your class in an interactive space. And while that interactivity is going on, watch out for the students who are still sat by themselves, who feel uncomfortable. If you ever see a student looking reserved by themselves, go and chat to them and ask them if they're okay, and really look out for any students who are feeling alienated. So one thing, maybe three things into one thing there.
Thank you, Tom. And as always, thank you very much for coming in and speaking on the Telltales podcast. So we will link within the show notes to some of the work that Tom has referenced within his podcast. And if you do have any further questions, please do get in touch with us. Thank you again for listening to this episode of the Telltales podcast.
Thank you so much, Chris. Good to come along.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Telltales podcast. Please do check out the Telltales blog, which can be found at telltales.port.ac.uk. You can also follow us on our social media channels at Tell Portsmouth on both Twitter and Instagram. Don't forget you can subscribe to our podcast here, but also for major music streaming platforms such as Apple Music and Spotify. Additional information about our shows can be found written within our show notes. We thank you for listening and look forward to seeing you next time.